Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here on The Takeaway, and Celeste Headlee is home for the holidays for a week and a half or so. We wish her well. The wait has been long, and for many thousands, it's been painful, but foreclosures saw their biggest drop last month in at least 5 years. Is that good news? Is it bad news? Is it paperwork? Is it real? Well, we're going to explore that in this segment with a number of voices. The number of November filings, just to get the numbers clear, are down a fifth compared to October and around a sixth on the numbers we had in the year-to-year comparison. Is the worst over? Louise Story is here, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
And we welcome back Behrouz Shahidi, who's a real estate agent in New Jersey, who we've had on the program throughout this whole crisis. Behrouz, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you today?
It's always great to talk to you. I'm doing very, very well. Susan Radke also joins us from Dearborn, Michigan, who may be facing foreclosure. Susan, how's that going?
We're still in the process.
I've
been working with the local home foreclosure and home foreclosure modification prevention program.
Right. So you're in the middle of the paperwork part of this, right?
Yes.
And Aaron Timlin also joins us. He's the executive director of the Contemporary Art Institute of Detroit, who had his New York home foreclosed upon. Aaron, it's all over for you, right?
Yes, good morning, John. My home was in a suburb of Detroit in Ferndale, not New York.
Oh, I see. All right, I've been misinformed here. So
okay.
your suburban home, you lost because of what happened in your job?
Yes, in early 2008, my employer could not continue to pay my salary, and so I went through about a year of being able to continue to make the mortgage payment. I had to stop making my credit card payments. And I had to make a decision whether I should find another job that paid to save my house or continue to work with my nonprofit. That when I informed the board, they told me that they probably wouldn't be able to keep the place going. And we were just switching over to really focus on doing some important social justice work through arts and music. And that was important for me to do. So I made a decision to risk losing my home. I fought it for about 10 months.
Right. And your home now is back on the market out there in Ferndale in suburban Detroit, right?
Yes, it is. I haven't checked what they're selling it for, but I know the house next door to me, when I was going through the foreclosure, sold for $10,000 to an investor from a bank after a foreclosure, and my home mortgage was $150,000. So
unbelievable.
It didn't make sense.
Susan Radke, what are the numbers in your case?
For me, personally, the house next to me went into foreclosure. It sold for
$47,000.
My home would sell for about half of what I owe on it.
And how much do you owe on it?
About $165,000.
That's unbelievable. That really takes your breath away. Susan, are we 50-50 here? Are we 80-20? Do you suspect you're going to lose your home if we talk to you in 6 months, or do you think you're going to pull this out?
I think I'm probably going to voluntarily lose my home. I have a son who has autism and severe cognitive impairments, and if I move to the next county, which has more money, he will be able to have more services provided for him, and I have a feeling that this may be the universe's way of telling me that it's time to move to the next county to provide for my son.
Well, Susan Radke, good luck to you. We will check in with you maybe in a few months to see how everything is going. Take care, all right?
Okay, thank you very much.
And Aaron Timlin, good luck to you. I know you probably don't want to check into those prices in Ferndale, out of sight, out of mind at this point, but good luck in the future.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
And have a happy new year. So, Behrouz Shahidi, when you hear numbers like that, people who bought houses or are working with mortgages that are like $120,000, $165,000, and homes are going for sale that have been foreclosed on for $10,000, what does that say to you?
It says to me that the previous setting of doing mortgages was really not based on reality, was just hyped up. And now we are paying for that setting.
You know, Behrouz, when we spoke to you at the very beginning of the housing crisis, you gave us this laugh. I wonder if you'll remember. You were a very optimistic fellow back then. Listen to this.
I like that.
Behrouz, are you doing much of that laughing these days?
I still do, because that's my defense mechanism. Otherwise, there is no reason to continue. But laughter remains, but the situation is not laughable at all.
Right. Let's bring Louise's story in here for a second. This is a supply and demand kind of issue where there are all kinds of pressures on the market, banks included, to withhold the supply to keep the prices up. But at some point, things kind of have to give. What's going on, Louise?
You know, it's this tricky dilemma we've talked about on the show so many times about when you have too many things to sell, you can't sell them all at once because it pushes prices down. It's happening in the housing market. You worry about it in the stock market with the government selling its AIG stake. You don't want to sell it all at once. It's the same scenario. And what you're talking about here is that there are 2.1 million units right now, houses, that the banks are not putting on the market. It's the shadow inventory because there's already 4 million on the market. And the banks fear if they put them all on at once, it'll push prices down even further than they already are.
All right. So, Behrouz Shahidi, you hear this number that foreclosures are down. Do you think that it's something real in the economy or are the banks manipulating things?
Banks manipulating things.
Wow.
It's very obvious to me.
What do you think, Louise?
Well, I don't think that there's necessarily a concerted effort.
It's not
They're
a conspiracy.
They're not coordinating.
Right.
Right. But certainly there's only a certain pace they can put things back on the market. Remember, it's not only the banks as well. There's the pace that the government is instructing Fannie and Freddie to put back bad loans. And so that pace drives a lot of the pace pushing through the system.
So given that the banks are sort of holding on to the supply for good reasons, as Louise's story says, and the pace of lending and sort of foreclosing is controlled by federal sort of levers in Washington, how frustrating is it for you as a real estate agent, Shahidi, before we go, or Behrouz, before we go?
It's frustrating, but I really believe that I'm helping people in both sides of the coin here, the ones that are buying and the ones that are selling.
Right.
So although it's painful, but I really feel that this is something I really have to do, and I am doing it.
Behrouz Shahidi, when's your next closing?
I don't know.
All right, Behrouz Shahidi, real estate agent from New Jersey, and Louise Story from our partner, the New York Times. Thanks so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.